to scale, it's really, really hard for a platform to earn a spot in this book. If I've included it, it's because it's grown into such a beast it cannot be ignored, or because I see the potential for it to become that kind of beast. When considering where to build your personal brand, you want to use nothing less than platforms upon which you can actually build your life. Every platform we discuss in the following fits that description.
Part 2. Create your pillar. 6. First, do this. No matter what kind of influencer you want to become, everyone must start with this step. Create a Facebook business page. Facebook is the cost of entry to building a personal brand. Do not try to tell me that you don't have to do it because you're targeting the 22 and unders who are not on Facebook in the same numbers as the older groups. As you'll see, the strides Facebook is making in video make it likely that it's about to become more appealing to those young viewers. You want to be waiting for them when they start opening Facebook accounts. Facebook will get the young demo. You can count on it. Don't ever underestimate Mark Zuckerberg, and don't ever bet against Facebook.
How I'm crushing it. Costa Capathanasis, Costa Oil, 10-minute oil change. Instagram, at Costa Capo. Constantine Costa Capathanasis sounds like a practical man. The first-generation Greek-American from Portland, Maine, won a Division I baseball scholarship to a college in Maryland. Forced to give up the sport professionally after a shoulder injury, he moved on to earn a Master of Science in Finance. After graduation, he worked for several large financial companies, but nothing stuck. I either got fired or was almost fired from every job. He chafed against bureaucracy. Not only did these large firms force him to follow strict, cumbersome protocols that to him seemed inefficient and counterproductive, but also their restrictive social media policies hampered his side business of making custom, hand-carved baseball bats. Bank trading hours were 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Costa found himself missing opportunities because he couldn't respond right away to potential customers on Twitter, which was enjoying its heyday. It didn't help that, as the years went on, friends from his baseball days made it to the majors and were making millions playing the game they loved while he was sitting in a cubicle. Many years went by in which he avoided watching baseball on television. He needed to plan an escape, so while still working for the financial firm, he sold the assets to the baseball bat business and bought a Quick Lube, a place where you take your car for a fast oil change. It wasn't the most glamorous or exciting business, but he saw it as an investment in a quasi-utility almost like electricity or water. In a car-dependent country with few mass transit options, most Americans will eventually need an oil change. Then, as was almost inevitable, he got fired. It was fantastic. Getting fired was this amazing thing for me. My quality of life went through the roof. I never realized how much of a weight was on me, and now it was gone. And it put me into high gear to do something with the business. Costa went all in on his Quick Lube company, which he named Quick Change Oil, but his strategies weren't all that effective. Direct mail, search engine optimization, an iHeartRadio commercial that was before its time. He wasted a lot of money. He found himself about 8 months later alone in the store on New Year's Day, 2016, because he had given his employees the day off. Sales were not great, and he was in a tough spot. Nothing was going on, so he was reading a book called Crush It. The more he read, the more he thought, man, I need to do this. No more direct mail. No more SEO. No more commercials. Instead, he took to YouTube, and in between cars and after work until 2 a.m., he taught himself about Facebook ads. I didn't want to storytell incorrectly. I didn't want to miss an opportunity. By February, 100% of his marketing budget was devoted to Facebook ads, and he was immersed in social engagement and creating content. He used Twitter searches to find any vehicle-related conversations that would give him a chance to talk to people. From Chevy Cobalts to Porsches, he photographed his customers' cars for Instagram, tricking the images out with photo filters to make them look snazzy and sharp. Customers like seeing their cars online so much, he doesn't have to ask them for permission anymore. They ask him to do it first. He started putting out educational videos to help inform potential customers about the ins and outs of their cars. We have put out videos on the different types of oils, the difference between a full synthetic and a conventional, on when you should do an engine flush, and we've gotten lots of feedback. People will type messages like, "This is the first time anyone has actually explained to me what the purpose of my air filter is." I truly believe that the most educated customer will always pick us. Less than a year after that New Year's Day, when he sat in his empty shop wondering how he was going to jumpstart his business, he had 6 store locations and was under contract for 2 more, spread out over several states. Today, he's busy running the business, keeping his social media engagement up and staying genuine, creating content, and appearing on various financial TV and radio shows to talk about his journey. He was even invited to speak at a university entrepreneurship program. He and his wife are talking about starting a family. He's been working on building his personal brand, too. In 2017, all the businesses were renamed Costa Oil, 10-minute oil change.
7. Get discovered. You need to understand something. When you're starting with nothing, you will find that your absolute breakthrough opportunities will be developed in 2 ways. Number 1, by the smart use of hashtags, a strategy that requires an unbelievably long grind. Number 2, by direct messaging, i.e. reaching out directly to people, offering something of value in return for their attention, a strategy that requires an unbelievably long grind. It's the second one that I believe holds the most promise, which is why, whenever possible, I've included instructions on how to collaborate and business develop within each platform we discuss in this book. Collaborations are the absolutely most tried and true way to grow a fan base quickly. Quickly being a relative term. In most cases, you should count on this process taking years, not months. If that bothers you, stop listening to this book. Many are uncomfortable with the idea of direct messaging total strangers. But let me help you think about these total strangers another way. Let's say a friend invites you to join a group for dinner at a restaurant, and she brings along a couple you do not know. You wind up sitting next to each other and have a great time. You're an interior designer, and you find out that this couple is in the beginning stages of deciding to redo their home. Do you hide the fact that you're an interior designer? Of course not. It's natural to tell them what you are doing for a living. And that's going to become part of your conversation because you've just discovered a mutual interest. Now, at the end of the evening, would it be weird to hand them a card and say, "Check out my website. Maybe we can do some work together. Or let me know if you need any other recommendations." Of course not. You have a mutual interest. They need a service. You can provide that service. It follows that you should give them the opportunity to decide if you would be a good fit. Online, social media platforms are the mutual friends connecting you to millions of people that share your interest in interior design. Your job is to do the research and find out which would find the most value in your offer and then make your case. I'll share with you the specific details on how to do this in upcoming chapters, but the general process is essentially the same on each platform. Reach out, make an offer they can't refuse, and get to work producing something that doesn't make them regret giving you a chance. Now, there's something you should know. Right this minute, I have around 500 DMs from people who want something from me. You know what I have to say to them? Mazel tov, and go away. And that's if I'm in a good mood, or I'm trying to be nice. Why would I encourage you to try to get other influencers' attention when I ignore or reject the majority of people who try this tactic with me? Because if they were doing it right, I wouldn't reject them. If I felt they weren't just trying to use me, if I thought they were just genuinely trying to be helpful, if they could recognize a hole in my business and have the knowledge and skills to fill it, I might consider talking to them. When you can't offer exposure or money, what do you have? Knowledge and skill. Do you own a pizza shop? Could you offer free pizza from your shop for 6 months? Are you a graphic designer? Could you offer to make 600 custom filters? Do you own a liquor store? As soon as your targets post shots of themselves enjoying wine, you could direct message them with an offer for a free case of wine for the month or for the rest of the year. P.S. New Jersey laws don't allow this, but other states do. Otherwise, I'd be doing this with my family business. People will tell you not to sell yourself cheap, but you can stand on that principle only when you have people willing to buy what you're selling. For a perfect example of how to do this right, read D-Rock's story in Chapter 3 of my book, Ask Gary Vee, or you can hear his version of the story in my Medium piece, How I Got My Job for Gary Vaynerchuk. If established influencers see an upside to collaborating with you, allowing you to post content on their page, working together to create content, they'll get back in touch. If not, they'll say no thanks, usually by not answering. But if you reach out for 6 or 7 hours a day, you will eventually find someone willing to try something new with you. Once you do, you'll have raised awareness with thousands of people who previously did not know you were alive. Provide something of value to your collab partner, and you'll quickly raise your profile as an influencer, in all likelihood, make a new friend. I won't lie, bizdevving this way is hard, tedious, and time-consuming. I like tedious. It means most people won't do it. If you do, you will win. If you got the money to run ads on all these platforms and pay influencers to feature your products, more power to you. But if you're just starting out and have no money, this is the number one thing you can do to build your brand. 18. Musically. I'm going to start with Musically because I'm betting that unless you're the parent of a 7 to 11 year old, you've never heard of it. If you have, I'm betting most of you never once thought it might be worth investigating for any other reason than checking on your kids' online activities. Musically, like a lot of its users, is young and creative and eager to grow up. It's a fun platform to consider because I think it's one of the most likely to be underestimated. It's also the one most likely not to exist when you're listening to this book. Because as of the time of this audio recording, the popularity has been in decline for almost a year. But you need to learn about it anyway, for reasons that should become clear in the next few minutes. Despite the evidence that platforms that start out hot with young people can and do successfully cross over to older audiences, the majority of entrepreneurs will still dismiss Musically, which is great, because it leaves the platform wide open for you to take it over. You'll have fun doing it, too. Musers, as the users of Musically are called, have turned this app into a creative phenomenon. Originally, it allowed people to make 15-second lip-sync videos, making public the rock star impersonations and glamming that previous generations used to do in front of their full-length closet mirrors. Today, the form has evolved to include original music, comedy skits, and even mini educational videos. Ballerinas, makeup artists, gymnasts, jugglers, athletes, rappers, vloggers, and hams of all stripes, including Jif the Pomeranian, are using the medium to show off their skill and style. You can create content as long as 5 minutes, compile video clips into stories, and collaborate on duets with other musers. The company saw immediate favor among the tween and teen crowd as soon as it launched in August 2014, with people not only downloading it, but returning to it and engaging in high numbers. For the first months of its existence, it grew, but at a slow and steady pace. Then, the designers decided to make a few minor changes to the app design, one of which included relocating the Musically logo so that it wasn't cropped out every time the video was shared on Instagram and Twitter. As soon as that happened, new users flooded to the app. Learning from the mistakes of its predecessors, which too often tried to contain users to their platform, It helps Musers build their fan base by allowing them to share its content on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and WhatsApp. It now has 200 million users, 30% of whom spend 30 minutes or more per day. No doubt, a small percentage of Musers are refugees from Vine, the defunct Twitter-owned 6-second video platform that was quickly overshadowed by Instagram Video and Snapchat, thanks to their slightly longer formats and fun editing tools. The natural question is, of course, how will Musical.ly avoid Vine's fate? One way is by aging up, creating features that appeal to their audience once those kids become teens, so they don't graduate to Snapchat or Insta. And it will have to evolve to compete for the younger audience too, as Snapchat and Insta start trending younger and younger. The way I see it, for Musical.ly to break away from its competition and gain momentum within the 12 to 17 year old crowd, it will have to pivot the way Facebook did a few years ago when it successfully transitioned into a mobile first platform, even though it was originally built for desktop. Musical.ly is so young, it should be limber and flexible enough to be able to adapt itself to whatever is the next big thing that changes the platform paradigm. Maybe it will be voice. Maybe it will be something that we can't even envision yet. Clearly, emerging musicians have a natural opportunity here. But of course, one of the best ways to become a big fish is to swim in a small pool, creatively adapting a platform for your needs. That's the tactic I use to build brand awareness on Musical.ly. You might wonder why I, a 42-year-old businessman with few ties to the music industry, have any interest in garnering attention on a platform geared towards 13-year-olds. Simple. Those 13-year-olds grow up to become 18-year-old entrepreneurs and 25-year-old marketers. When I was 12 and dreaming of building businesses, no one knew what to call me. Entrepreneur wasn't part of our lexicon. Today, entrepreneurs are pop culture icons, and the kids are growing up watching Shark Tank. Maybe I can help inspire them to get to where they want to go faster. Maybe one day we'll do business together. One of my earliest forays into the platform came about because I thought kids would get some value out of hearing sage words from hip-hop artist Fat Joe on Ask Gary Vee. To help the demographic find the show, I posted a clip of me jumping through the ceiling set to Fat Joe's All the Way Up, with the hope that if they liked what they saw, they'd keep watching and listening. If they did, they'd catch the meme I created from a clip of me pushing hard work set to Rihanna's song Work, or an inspirational video reminding people to always look up to the stars set to Coldplay's A Sky Full of Stars. I made another one of me remembering how much I hated school. How I'd sit in the classroom thinking that one day I would prove all my teachers and classmates who thought I was a loser wrong. Imagine how much that message might mean to a kid who's getting the same shit today. What if just a few of those kids see it and realize there's someone out there who gets them, and they find out what I've accomplished and think, yeah, me too. This is how someone like me, who's not in the music industry and can't sing, managed to tie business and entrepreneurship into a so-called lip-syncing platform, not only to make a difference, but to make fans for life. Even before I deployed these content strategies, however, when I was just gathering information so I could figure out how to build out my profile, I asked two of Musical.ly's top users to make guest appearances on the Ask Gary Vee show. On episode 198, I'm flanked by two 15-year-olds, Ariel Martin and Ariana Trejo. Definitely not my typical guests, but we had a blast. My audience and I got access into their insights, and they got a chance to show their skills on a big YouTube show. The thing is, my show is peanuts compared to the big venues where they've appeared, like the red carpet at the People's Choice Awards. The real value to me is that when their fans Google them and find the Musical.ly memes they made while on my show, it will raise their awareness of my brand. When baby Ariel is a humongous star, by the way, in 2017, she was listed in Time Magazine's third annual list of most influential people on the internet, I'll have the content that the world is hunting for in a few years when they want to see who she was in her early days. Even if Musical.ly turns out to be a fad, let us remember that every season, brands pay millions of dollars to run ads against pilots for new series, most of which statistically will not exist after 9 months. As of 2012, 65% of new shows are canceled after one season. It literally does not matter how long a platform lasts. What matters is that it exists. If you're seeking to build your audience, go where the audience goes, wherever that may lead. Consume the platform's content for a couple of weeks to get a feel for what's appealing to users. Then, strategize how you can create content that will successfully penetrate that market. Get to know it and put your resources into it. Not all, mind you. Just some. More if you're comfortable with the platform. Less if you decide it's not for you. But to label any platform as irrelevant shows a lack of imagination and vision. Don't ever doubt that the designers of the platform have a greater vision for it than whatever it is you see now. Platforms evolve, either by design or by accident, when the market takes them in a whole nother direction. If you get in early, you can evolve with the platform, become a real presence on it, and its designers may even come to you and ask you for help. For example, they may give you early beta program access, letting you play around with new features they're hoping to launch. Or you can get first dibs on creating fresh new content in a format or style no one has ever seen before, essentially creating a symbiotic relationship between your brand and the platform. No one can finish a marathon without proper training. Whether you do it on the treadmill or the running path, you have to get to know your body, build your endurance, and figure out what physical, nutritional, and psychological practice extract your best performance. The same goes for social media platforms. In 2012, I was bullish about an app called SocialCam. That was successful for maybe 9 months before it flopped. In those 9 months, however, I learned the strategies that served me well when Vine and Instagram came along. The only thing you risk by taking leaps into social media unknowns is time. You want to break out and live the life. You say you're going to die if you have to spend one more day in your accounting job, but you're not willing to risk your time in case a platform turns out to be MySpace or Vine instead of Facebook or Instagram? Who are you to be so fancy? When you're nothing but a beggar, you don't get to be choosy. Download every new social platform, taste it, and understand it. Drop it if it doesn't work for you or you can't get comfortable, but never reject anything without educating yourself about it first, which is good advice for, like, life. On a side note, going off of script, there's a new app called Vero, right? Everybody's talking about it as of the recording of this book. People are asking me about my opinions. I'm on it. I'm playing with it. I'm posting on it. And I'm tasting it. Do I think Vero is going to be the next Instagram? I don't. But I'm prepared if it is. Musical.ly 101. By the way, really quick, it's musical.ly when you're looking for it on the internet. Work those hashtags. I can't believe we didn't talk about hashtags in Crush It. In fact, I didn't mention them in print until my third book. Writing hashtags is one of the bedrocks of social media and a key to discoverability. One of the quickest ways to build traction on Musical.ly, for example, would be to open the app, examine the trending tags on the Discover page, and work on producing great content around those trending tags so that you can be spotted by the kids who would otherwise have no way to know you were worth checking out. That includes the curators at Musical.ly itself, who are apt to reward good content by selecting it to be automatically featured when people open the app. That hand curation creates more random opportunities for you to be seen than you might find on other platforms. Don't count on winning this virtual lottery ticket as your shortcut to stardom, though. The amount of hard work and creativity you apply to your content will be a much better predictor of your success. You can also create amazing content coupled with your own clever, original hashtags. Knowing your way around hashtag culture is an excellent way to give your quality content longevity and legs. Collaborate. There was a time when the whole appeal of stars was their untouchable quality. It gave them mystery and cachet. And if we did actually get access to them, in the form of, say, an autographed photo, that meant a lot. But today's stars are measured by their approachability, and they can pay a serious price if they get to Hollywood. Take advantage of this. There is nothing stopping lyricists or songwriters from uploading their creation, direct messaging top musers, and giving them a chance to lip sync or even perform their material. You can do the same thing with a funny skit, or a poem, or some other work. I've seen it ad nauseam. The best way to reach out to a community is to become part of a community. Engage, comment, share, and create without asking anyone for anything. Become part of the community, and you'll have a much better chance of getting someone to create a meme using your material. Or better yet, create your own meme that other people fall in love with and share. It's just that in this one man's point of view, the top 1 to 2% of influencers on any platform are often overpriced. Not always. You might get lucky and find some who are great deals because, despite having the most reach, they've underpriced themselves. But eventually, people get wise, so don't count on it. Regardless, the enormous opportunity for marketers can be found in the middle and long tail of influencers. So, if my brand were really attractive to tweens and young teens, I would spend 40% of my overall marketing budget on Musical.ly, and 40 to 70% of that amount directly arranging deals with Musical.ly celebrities. The rest I would use experimenting with programmatic auction ads. Then I'd watch closely to see which performed better, adjusting as I go. Musical.ly is the perfect place for a performance-oriented person to sell a performance. But it's also a place where a performance-oriented person can sell pencils, acai juice, and fidget spinners. An artist could make a video of himself painting or drawing set to music. A writer can make a video that evokes her mood for the day. I make inspirational and motivational memes out of larger pieces of pillar content. My best hits have been made by clipping a word or phrase from one of my rants set to music. Want to hear me speak Russian? Check out my Hustle Musical.ly video. Also, see how I managed to link ALS Ice Bucket Challenge to Gwen Stefani's The Sweet Escape. That's probably the best singing I've ever done in my life. Creative people can be creative anywhere. And the most creative people do it where no one else has tried it before. More often than not, people who produce content for people like themselves often hit their mark better than people who are one step away from their audience. I do well with alpha guys because I have alpha male DNA. I'm also hugely empathetic, so I can also deeply connect with emotionally intelligent people who are patient enough to get past my alpha DNA. A dancer intuitively knows how to produce content for other dancers. Someone who's transformed his life through self-development knows how to reach others seeking a similar epiphany. Your creativity will be the variable to your success on this platform, and any other. Imagine this. Let's say that after working for years as a professional singer and actor, you decided you were done pursuing stardom and made the choice instead to take over your family's summer camp, located in the woods just outside the limits of your hometown. This is an exciting move. Imagine, you are finally going to stay in a home long enough to invest in some real furniture and get a dog. And you aren't leaving the industry entirely. You plan to add more acting and musical theater classes to the camp so you can continue to share your passion and expertise. You smile as you imagine the all-camp variety show at the end of each summer session. Unfortunately, you didn't take over a thriving business. While once, yours was one of the only camps of its kind in town, over the last decade or so, several more have been established here and in surrounding areas, and business has gone down. In particular, summer camp registrations are nowhere near where you think they should be. Once, you had to drop a session because too few children enrolled. You've tried everything you can think of to grow the business. But, compared to the newer, fancier options to choose from, your camp seems a little nerdy and old-fashioned. While you're hanging out with your 11-year-old niece one day, she shows you a video of herself lip-syncing. It's the weirdest thing you've ever seen. A 15-second close-up clip in which your niece bops around, sometimes backward, making duck faces and shooting hand signals to Kesha's Praying. It's like an excerpt from a music video. You ask her if mom knows she's playing around on a site where anyone can see her. Sure, your niece replies. All of my friends are on it. It's just a place to sing and dance. A social media platform embraced by 11-year-olds who love to sing and dance. What is this thing called again? You set up a Musical.ly account and start filming yourself performing your favorite songs. You ask your campers to help you pick the song, and you let them direct you. They're impressed. For an old person, you don't look or sound half bad when singing their music. For the record, you're 35. You're not even lip-syncing. You're the real deal, straight up. You create micro music videos that not only showcase your talent, but also the camp. You film from different locations every day. The boathouse, the pagoda, the archery field, the arts and crafts pavilion, and of course, the amphitheater. One of the girls asks if she can film herself with your phone. You send home a permission slip asking parents' consent to let the kids make Musical.ly videos on the camp account. They know their children are already there, and most agree. From then on, every day, a new camper gets to produce 4 pieces of content for the camp's Musical.ly account. Kids are fighting over the chance to be the muser of the day. It becomes the biggest reward they can get, and all the kids start working extra hard to be helpful to earn their time. There's an added benefit to letting the kids control your platform. It's a great learning strategy. Instead of figuring out for yourself what kids want to see on Musical.ly, you let the 9 to 11-year-olds show you. You now get to watch them, take note of their behaviors, and get a sense of how they think about hashtags and trending topics. Again, with the parents' permission, you let the kids document their Camp Olympics, scavenger hunt, final campfire, and all the camp traditions that have marked the summers of 3 generations. Every child who makes a Musical.ly video immediately tags his or her friends so they can see it. The kids also show it to their parents and their parents' friends. They show it off at school when classes start again in the fall. Over the course of the year, awareness for your Musical.ly page and the camp slowly begins to rise. By spring, when parents start thinking about which camps to register their children for, the name of your camp is fresh in their minds. You seal a deal when the kids inform their parents that they've all decided they want to attend camp together during the same session. You become the most popular, fun, hip camp director ever, and your popularity soars, along with the awareness of the camp you run. Registrations double, and your performing arts classes are so popular you start to offer them during the rest of the year. You initiate a music video class, which includes teaching the kids the steps to famous music video routines. Within 5 to 8 years, the camp is just one of the summer options available through your new city-based school for performing arts. You're a smaller star than you'd once hoped to be, but you've never been happier.
How I'm crushing it. Chithra Durgam, DDS, Aesthetic Dental. Instagram, @DrDurgam. Dr. Chithra Durgam has accomplished the near impossible. She's made it fun to go to the dentist. How else can you explain the fact that many of her first-time clients call her at the request of their children? Let me explain. When Chithra started her private practice in 2004, she did what most medical practitioners do to get referrals. She sent out direct mail pieces to let her northern New Jersey neighbors know she was open for business. Social media, she thought, was for personal use. It wasn't until she started following a social media expert online and then read his book, Crush It, that her thinking shifted and she understood how building a personal brand on social media could help grow a business. She was intrigued but hesitated to start. Doctors and dentists were constrained by a lot of HIPAA rules, and We tend to be overly concerned about what each other thinks about the marketing we're doing. But she gave it a lot of thought and decided that instead of using my free time to go golfing, if I'm using that time to interact with my patients and educate people in a fun way about dentistry, there can't be anything wrong with that. And so I kind of just took a leap of faith. For years, she has spent 4 to 5 hours every day, her lunch hour, and the time she has after her two boys go to bed on social media, engaging, reacting, and educating. She has a presence on all the usual suspects, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and she has written posts for Medium. But what sets Chitra apart from almost anyone over the age of 25, and certainly from any medical practitioner, is that she's on Musical.ly too. And that's why so many kids beg their parents to bring them to see her. She creates lip-synced music videos about different procedures like tooth whitening. She does PSA announcements about healthy eating, mouthing the words of a spoof version of Ed Sheeran's Shape of You. Sometimes she posts an educational clip, like the one pointing out the difference between a porcelain crown and a veneer. She dances. She does comedy, often in a white jacket, sometimes wielding a toothbrush. She's goofy and awkward, and while that might be all she was, were she just another muser, the fact that she's a 44-year-old dentist makes the whole deal pretty hilarious. The comments and responses she gets from the young users there are overwhelmingly positive, and two of her clips were featured by the platform. Her young patients, the ones in the Musical.ly age bracket, follow her. They bring their phones to school and show their friends, and their friends say, "Mom, look at this video. I want to go to this dentist." Chitra gets a similar response from Snapchat, where she creates content tailored for a slightly older crowd. There she has a weekly series called The Office, modeled after the hit television show of the same name. She and members of her staff have also staged scenes from Charlie's Angels and created snaps and stories using bitmojis, music, and props. She used to try to document, but her audience responded so positively to her creative work that now she focuses on that instead. Many of the people who find her on Musical.ly and Snapchat can't come to her office because they live too far away. But on Instagram, where she can target more locally, she has a higher conversion rate. People DM her for appointments all the time. In the year since she got serious about pumping out consistent, quality content to these three platforms in addition to all the others, not just every so often, she has seen a 30% increase in new patients, with 3 to 4 inquiries about braces and whitening procedures per day coming in via DM. Not only that, Lou Leone, vice president and general manager of WNYW Fox 5, saw her on Snapchat and invited her to come to Good Day New York to talk about flossing after an Associated Press report published that it may be unnecessary. For the record, Dr. Durgam is pro-flossing. Since then, she's been invited to speak about personal branding at meetings and on podcasts. She is currently working with different brands to help them develop ideas to promote their products through social media, and she has received inquiries from other dentists and doctors asking her for social media consults too. I have taken time to learn all aspects of developing a brand before pursuing this work. I understand that I do have something valuable to offer. Most of her professional colleagues still don't get it. I've actually gotten a lot of pushback from people and other businesses. They want a return on their efforts right away. They don't understand why I'm investing time. They don't understand that social media is a long game and that it's about developing a brand as much as it is about selling a product. And if nothing else, at least you develop rapport with people who come to your business. But they don't really see that. So it's been a little lonely because I'm doing work that I believe in, even though those people around me may not agree with my methods. Even some of her clients wonder how she has time to put out so many videos. And then I'll just say, my staff and I are very serious about our work, but when we're not working, we would rather spend our free time interacting with patients and educating them, as opposed to doing something that's only in our self-interest. Once I've explained our intention, it's been fine. I'm kind of going against everybody right now, but I think over time, people will understand social media is very important to business. One of the reasons I'm so excited about this book is because when I wrote Crush It, I didn't have access to a lot of examples of other people using the platforms the way I was. I was just too early. But now, armed with stories like Chithra's, I can suffocate all of your excuses. Until 10 minutes ago, you might not have even heard of Musical.ly. Now you know that a dentist is out there using it and other platforms to build her business. That's awesome. Education and execution are the keys to this new world.
9. Snapchat. Despite its 173 million daily active users, its 10 billion daily video views, its 2.5 billion daily snaps, and the approximately 18 visits it enjoys from its daily users a day, Snapchat remains another massively underestimated platform. Let me clue you into an important tell. When the normals, that is the non-tech, non-business crowd, are the first to start spending inordinate amounts of time on a platform, that's a signal to start paying close attention. That's what drew me to Musical.ly early on. And that's why I knew Snapchat had an exciting future when it first came out in 2011. I saw it as the first social network to closely recreate the way we communicate face-to-face. Its founders, Evan Spiegel and Bobby Murphy, conceived it as an anti-Facebook, a photo-sharing app for spontaneous, imperfect, and impermanent content. When Snapchat first came on the scene in 2011, the messaging app's vertical video and left-right swiping had people totally confused. It took most users, even the young, a few minutes to click around and get used to it. For teens, though, it was worth figuring out, because it addressed two universal adolescent realities. One, you don't want to hang out where your mom hangs out. And two, you want to lock your room. Because adults didn't get it, because images self-destructed 1 to 10 seconds after being opened, and because it gave you the option of drawing and writing text or captions on top of your pictures, the kids were quick to see its potential as texting 2.0, a freer, less curated, and less dangerous place than other platforms to share and creatively express themselves. And share they did. It became widely derided and even feared as the next sexting tool for the high school set, although it never really was a sexting app. That was just the media jumping on a select few cases and running with the attention-grabbing headlines. Today, people don't talk about sexting and Snapchat in the same breath anymore, just as people stopped sneering at Twitter for being the place where attention hogs posted what they ate for lunch, and at Facebook for being a place where college students shared their beer pong pictures. Today, the Snapchat app allows you to post video as well as photos and has added all kinds of extras, like filters, geofilters, lenses, emojis, and video editing tools like Slow-Mo. Content is no longer ephemeral. You can always hack by taking screenshots of images to save them, but with the addition of Memories, which stores your content on the app's servers, Snapchat essentially caved to the human desire to save and revisit the important moments of our lives. The game-changing introduction, however, and the one that would turn out to have the most influence on influencers, was Stories, a function that allows you to link a series of videos and photos together to tell a longer narrative visible to the whole Snapchat community for 24 hours. It arrived in 2013, and I publicly pronounced it a dud. You can watch me make the blunder emphatically and passionately at Le Web 2013 on YouTube. I love the platform, but I thought the change introduced too much friction in the UI and betrayed the whole point of the app, which was to create snack-sized disappearing content. I was dead wrong. The story feature became the main place users could consume content at scale. Less than a year later, 40% of American teenagers were using Snapchat daily. I learned an important lesson from that bad call on Snapchat. A devoted, sticky fan base is willing to be patient as you experiment your way to the next iteration. The next big launch, Discover, saw Snapchat graduate into a bona fide media platform by offering a page where users would find a slew of brands like National Geographic, T-Mobile, and ESPN. Snapchat now had access to advertising revenue, and that meant so did anyone who could crack the Snapchat code. The man who did it is named DJ Khaled. Before I introduce him, we're going to reminisce about Ashton Kutcher. He wasn't the first star on Twitter. Big shout out to MC Hammer, who joined in May in 2007, and LeVar Burton, who joined in December 2008. But after joining in January 2009, Kutcher was the first celebrity to truly scale his brand through the platform. Like Hammer and Burton, he'd been building his brand through talent and hustle for decades as a model, a sitcom and film actor, and a producer and director for the reality TV show Punk'd. I often talk about Ashton when I talk about the history of Twitter, because it was only 4 months after joining that he would become the first Twitter user to boast a million followers, thanks to a brilliant campaign of challenging CNN to race to hit the milestone. Suddenly, Twitter, which had seemed like a joke to most people, was mainstream. DJ Khaled created the Ashton Kutcher moment for Snapchat. For over two decades, he built a name for himself in the music industry as a Miami-based DJ, producer, and radio host. Khaled joined Snapchat in the fall of 2015, snapping inspirational and motivational keys to life and success. His fondness for the platform, he wrote in his memoir, The Keys, was that it's not about the angle or editing or lighting or how good you look. It's just you for 10 seconds being real with your fans. That authenticity had earned him a sizable fan base. By November or December of that year, anyone following social media could see that whatever it was he was doing, it was something special. Thousands of kids were showing up to meet his bus in places like Des Moines, Iowa. You could start to feel the scale of Snapchat was shifting. Then, in December of that year, Khaled left a friend's house by jet ski, only to get caught off guard by the waning early winter light. Disoriented in the now pitch black water, he proceeded to snap his entire ordeal until he finally made it back to shore. By the next day, his popularity and his personal brand had exploded. DJ Khaled made it official. Snapchat was now a star-making vehicle. So how did Khaled do it? How does a grown-up become famous on a platform that serves as a communication tool amongst tweens and teens? By not overthinking anything. Unpolished content is native to Snapchat, and Khaled just was who he was. Some people might call such banal, spontaneous content dumb and worthless, but that would be like saying that the minutiae of our lives are dumb and worthless. They're not. When combined, those raw, unfiltered moments make up who we are. We don't judge mundane behavior as dumb when we interact with people. We save such judgment for truly dumb behavior. We accept people in their natural habitats, and we understand that every word people utter is not going to be movie script worthy. Snapchat is simply a channel that captures the unvarnished reality. The only reason that some people think that what gets shared there is dumb is because it's on screen, and we've been conditioned to think that anything on screen has to be perfectly produced and performed. On Twitter, we're expected to be clever or politically astute and insightful. Facebook is where we show off our families and vacations. On Instagram, we build relationships through images and short videos. Snapchat, though, is where we put our throwaway content. It's a relief to many because it demands little of either its content creators or users. It's eliminated the great barrier to many social networks, which is the anxiety of wondering what you're going to post next, whether it will be well received, and whether it could come back to haunt you one day. With the freedom of posting anything, people could experiment and get comfortable building their personal brands without fear of repercussions. That opened the floodgates for many to unleash their creativity and discover and develop new skills. More than one person has left a corporate job or fledgling startup because playing around on Snapchat led them to create a new art medium or become an influencer, which attracted brands eager to pay them tens of thousands of dollars to promote their products in Snapchat stories. It is staggering how many families are filming their days and building actual fame. It's especially easy if you're willing to include your children. That's an extremely personal choice. But babies and cute animals always win, hands down. Kerry Robinson learned that when she used Snapchat to film herself engaging in hashtag salon talk with her baby girl, Jade, while Jade took to her mother's hair with a brush. Her stories on Facebook went viral and garnered articles and TV segments in national media, from CBS News to Essence Magazine. Today, Jade has her own ad-supported YouTube channel with 74,000 subscribers and an Instagram account with more than 200,000 followers. You can watch a video of her opening a gift of children's products from a hair care company and see a photo that expresses thanks for a t-shirt sent by a company that celebrates children with naturally curly hair. You couldn't get a purer example of a person who is famous and, it would seem, earning money for simply being herself. That's what can come of posting a single piece of excellent content. What will come of Jade's online celebrity in the long term remains to be seen, of course, but at a time when people are desperate for good news and uplifting, heartwarming content, a glimpse of ordinary life could be just what they're looking for. Many people have already gotten some brand traction and are becoming influencers, including some featured in this book, stopped producing content on Snapchat as soon as Instagram stories came out in August 2016. The thinking was that Snapchat is toast. Why bother? You bother because it's a mistake to give up one of the tools in your tool belt for no reason. Hear this. Instagram and Snapchat are not the same. As always, people are looking for different things on each. Why would you deprive them? Sure, it's hard. That's the challenge. But that's also the opportunity, because it's hard. Only one in 20 of you is going to do it well. You should be busting your ass to be that one in 20. I understand that you want to focus on what is giving you the best returns right now. But what if it doesn't always? And why would you turn your back on a potentially whole new audience? As I write this book, I'm constantly checking the App Store to see which platforms and apps are ranked highest. Snapchat is often in the top five. That means it's not an irrelevant platform, and no influencer is too good for that. If anything, this app is one of the most valuable for anyone whose brand is starting to scale. Much of your competition has surely become too reliant and focused on Instagram, which means those potential eyeballs still on Snapchat are looking for more content to feed them. Make sure you're the one to deliver it. It's so easy for an influencer to become sucked into the vortex of the media machine they've created. You risk becoming a caricature of yourself, especially on Instagram, where the images are so highly curated. As a feature within your Instagram ecosystem, Instagram stories are almost required to stay within the lines and support the narrative you've created there. Snapchat, on the other hand, is an entity unto its own. You can use it to break away from the familiar narrative and show sides of yourself that simply don't exist anywhere else. It gives you differentiated content. Whereas all your other channels intertwine with each other to support your pillar content, Snapchat stands alone. That's an excellent reason in and of itself to take it seriously. Even when its DNA makes it a natural draw for the mundane and silly, it gives you a place to be surprising and different, often in the most ordinary, banal ways. This is advice I should take to heart too. I could be even doing better myself. Snapchat 101. Back to the original question. How should grown-ups build their brands and dreams on a communication tool for tweens and teens? Some people, like baby Jade, have so much charisma that they're going to go viral the minute they present themselves or their work in public. But those individuals are few. For the vast majority, it will take talent plus a combination of tactics and strategy to get noticed. Yet, Snapchat limits those tactics. There are no hashtags, for example, so no discoverability. What that means is that building a brand on Snapchat is truly a test for your branding prowess. It's not about running ads and quantifying every click and mathematical variable. It's about hacking culture. Snapchat reveals who's good at it and who's not. This is why you shouldn't wonder whether to bother with Snapchat now that Instagram has its own version of stories. Whether or not Snapchat can compete over time, it's a terrific training ground to become a superior marketer and branding expert, not just a conversion-based digital salesperson. Let me say that again in another way. The business world is separated into two camps, conversion-based salespeople and branding and marketing people. The former are short-term players, the latter long-term. With no disrespect meant towards sales, I always try to teach you to be branding and marketing people because the great, life-changing upside resides in long-term thinking, not in figuring out how to make a quick buck. For example, Lauren Everts, creator of The Skinny Confidential, takes a long-term view of her investment in Snapchat. I answer every single snap I get, and sometimes I get 200 a day. I sit down at night for an hour, and in the morning for an hour, and I answer every single question. It's almost like text messaging your readers, like they're your friends. I think it's allowed people to really come into my life and allowed me to come into theirs. It's just a different way of being social. And it allows me to tell a story. And while I tell the story, I'm 100% providing value to the audience. For instance, if I'm doing cryotherapy, I take a picture of where I am. And then I show me in the booth freezing my ass off. And then I can show what I wore. And after that, I Snapchat the little flyer with the benefits. So what my followers get out of it is where to go, what the benefits are, what they should wear, and what it looks like when you're in the chamber. With every single thing I do, I try to hit those 4 points. I'm not just going to post a picture of my coffee cup. I'm going to say, today I'm drinking iced coffee. I'm drinking it with a silicone straw because it's BPA-free. And I like cinnamon in it because it helps with your blood sugar. Every single snap needs to leave them with something or else it's narcissistic. With Instagram stories, you're competing with a lot of people. Snapchat has white noise, and whenever I see white noise, I'm intrigued because that's a way to stand out. Some of these influencers have just been taking pictures for the last 5 years. Snapchat forces you to show personality. Are you intelligent? Are you funny? What do you bring to the table other than what you're wearing? The thing to remember is that no one is famous only on Snapchat. Because of the temporary nature of the majority of the content, the only way to allow it to live long enough for people to discover and get to know you is to cross-pollinate with other platforms. For example, if you missed DJ Khaled's jet ski drama, you can still find it on YouTube. Same with Kerry and Jade Robinson's salon talk. That means to be a Snapchat influencer, you need to be strong on other platforms as well. The content you produce for Snapchat has to be powerful enough to draw views on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm going to veer off here a little and rant. This is an interesting point, and in general, I think it's really silly to be famous in only one platform. I say in here, no one is famous only in Snapchat, but the truth is there probably are some people that are only famous in Snapchat. There are many people that are only famous in Instagram. I highly recommend cross-pollinating in all platforms because you don't want to be vulnerable to the platform itself. The way to get discovered on Snapchat is not much different from the way television stations try to get people to tune in to their programs, which is to market in all the other places where people who might be interested in it are already going. That's what I did. I was never concerned by the lack of discoverability on Snapchat, because I could see that all I had to do was draw awareness to it through my base on Twitter, YouTube, and my website. I did not use tactics like running Facebook ads to convert people. Instead, I branded and I marketed. You'll be in the minority if you're able to figure out a formula that works equally across platforms. Most people lean heavily on the one or two they're most comfortable with, and that rare skill could make you a dominant force here. All you're doing when testing discovery strategies is figuring out how to siphon people's attention. For example, if you want to bring awareness to your Snapchat profile and you send out lots of emails, add your Snapchat code to the email. Pretty easy, right? You could wear a t-shirt with your Snap code printed on it, or you could create custom geo filters, which are still very underpriced.